Welcome to the August 15th City Council meeting, and welcome to all of you who are here in the audience. We're always glad to have audience participation, so thank you for coming. Roll call, Chief Ames.
Counselor Demelwell.
Here.
Counselor Hersey.
Here.
Counselor Price.
Here.
Counselor Ward.
Here.
Mayor Lemire.
Here, thank you. Reports of counselors, Commissioner Demelwell.
All right, the last few weeks almost seems like a blur. There's been so much going on. I went to the CMH new cancer center groundbreaking on August 4th, and you know, that project is an amazing collaboration between the City of Astoria and the school district, Columbia Memorial Hospital, and who am I forgetting there?
Recology,
right, Western Oregon Waste. But you know, we're gonna have world-class cancer treatment in a small city. That's gonna add some jobs, so it's a wonderful project. And also, I'm sure that there will be others talking about the weekend's festivities, but my hat's off to the Sister City Committee and the Astoria Regatta Organization, and there's so many others to thank, but our community really came together over the weekend to put on quite an event, and it was great to see the representatives of our sister city from Waldorf, Germany as well.
Thank you, Councilor Well, I got a little lecture from Dr. Sunny Park about missing the groundbreaking there. He was keeping track, so I did apologize and told him I would never miss the groundbreaking again. Some of you may have read the Daily Historian today, Fort George giving bikes to their employees and creating a little bike shelter. And I think, I asked Councilman Emily for permission to talk about this. I think this is such forward-thinking action from a local business that has done so much for the community, doing so much more. So if you hadn't tracked it, they've given bikes to employees and promised they would ride the bikes to and from work at least 40 days out of the year. They created a little bike shelter in the parking lot. Councilor Nimble's husband is actually biking to and from work up in Danville, kind of thing. And this is getting people out of the cars and getting their, improving their health, improving community health. Fewer cars on the road, fewer parking places taken. I think it's incredible forward-looking, and the Fort George continues to be one of the community leaders in that sort of thinking. So thanks for what you're doing to make this happen. Over the weekend, we had the honor of hosting one of the city councilors from Waldorf, Germany. That was really interesting, talking with a councilor there about city politics, how things work and don't work. He represents the Green Party in Waldorf, Germany, and so he had a similar sort of an outsider perspective on politics. It was fun sharing that with him. This coming Friday at the library at 6 o'clock, the library and the Lower Columbia Diversity Project are hosting another Oregon Humanities Conversation Project. And this, interestingly, is one of the first ones that the Diversity Project brought to Astoria. It's called Whiteout, the Future of Race in Oregon. And it was a revelation for people who attended it. This was about 4 years ago. Astoria's history as a sundown city. It was listed as a sundown city where people of color did not want to be on the streets after sundown. And it was a real interesting examination. It started so many trains of thought that we're still working with today. So I really encourage people to come attend if possible. It's this Friday, 6 o'clock, so you'll still be able to get to Wine Pilot, 6 o'clock at the Astoria Library. And I have to thank Amy Kreider, who's doing the adult programming at the Astoria Library, for putting together some wonderful programming there. So this is just another example. 6 o'clock this Friday, Astoria Public Library. Thank you.
Counselor Price.
Well, it has been an extraordinary couple of weeks, and I've tried to think, well, what's the through thread of all of it, all of this, these people from city staff to the hospital to our Mayor Lemire, who was at Betsy Johnson's speed the last couple of weeks, being able to be everywhere all at once and give a great speech. And really what came to me is, this is what you can do when you have a year-round community. People here are living here and working here and are able to spend time with all the nonprofits and businesses and associations that do things. And so, after thanking all of them, I want to thank my fellow councilors and the mayor for all that you have done over the past year or so to talk about doing everything we can to keep this a year-round community.
Thank you. I have no advocacy. I just want to say that it was very fun over the last week to get to spend some time with our friends from Germany. They're amazing. They give us a totally different perspective on life, and it was good. The 50th year recutting of the ribbon for the mega bridge was entertaining. There were some very good speeches, a nice ride across the river. It's just, all in all, been a really nice time for the last couple of weeks, as the other councilors have said. And I guess we do have kind of a year-round city, and I do appreciate that.
Okay, and this weekend was just amazing for me to have the honor of being the co-admiral. The theme of the weekend really was connectedness, and we talked about being connected to Warrenton, and the co-admiral was Mark Quila, which was a lot of fun. And then we talked about the fact that the bridge actually connects us all the way to Waldorf, Germany, because they were here 50 years ago to lead the parade across the river, and they sent a delegation of 18 people back here for the rededication. So it was almost like a family reunion. It was just lots of fun, and we had a lot of laughs and enjoyed one another so much, and there were a lot of tears when they left. I mean, it truly was a very moving experience. And I wanted to point out this amazing sculpture down here at the end. That rock, and it's Bahia? Is that
Blue right? Bahia, and it comes from Brazil.
It is, according to the Burgermeisterin, and I don't question a Burgermeisterin, it is over a billion years old. Billion. And so they fashioned this with the bridge, and then with our city symbol and theirs. It's just I'm so excited to have it. I was telling Brett, though, that we really, really need to have some place to display these things so that the public can see them, because that's really an amazing piece of art. Also, the Burgermeisterin at the last gathering that we were at gave me some gifts to give to each of the city councilors, so I would like to do that at this time. They also mentioned that it was wonderful to stay with families here, that they really did feel like they were part of the community and part of a real American family while they were here. So I just wanted to pass that on. If you know one of the host families, let them know how much they appreciated that, that they really felt like they were a part of the community.
There's one of these for each of you, and I'm trying to figure out what happened to the other four. I'll get them to you. Okay. A very nice briefcase with the symbol of Waldorf on it, and we all got one, but I have to figure out where it went. Okay, moving on. Okay, are there any changes to the agenda?
We do need to remove item 6E, which is the authorization of solid waste engineering consultant services for the former landfill project. There's some modifications that are needed on that item, and we're going to be bringing it back to you most likely at your next meeting.
Okay. Anyone on the council would like to change? Okay. Presentation, Oregon Brownfield Award.
And we have Stacy Frost from Ball Foster Orangi here, and I think it would be appropriate if we have some of our partners for this project maybe come forward, representatives from Ecology and from Astoria School District are here.
Okay,
And Stacy, I'll let you introduce the award a little bit while he's unpacking. This is I'll tell you a brief introduction. This was an award that was given to the project team for the redevelopment of the sports complex back in May. And due to scheduling conflicts, no one from the city of Astoria is able to attend, but Stacy Frost, who was the design engineer for the project, was able to attend the conference in Sun River. And so I'll let Stacy maybe talk a little bit about it after presenting this award.
You took half of my speech, Brett.
Okay.
You don't.
Well, I figured I'd cover for it.
I had it all formal and okay, smile. That's true. You can go wherever you like to.
We need a
case. You need a case. You want to sit on the top so we can look at the rest of the meeting?
Thank you.
Put it right in front of your face. So, Mayor, councilors, staff, members of the audience, I'd like to congratulate you on receiving one of the Oregon Brownfield Awards. So this award is presented by Business Oregon annually to 4 or 5 outstanding projects in the state. And I've actually got... So this year marks the sixth presentation of the Oregon Brownfields Award and the recognition of the outstanding brownfield redevelopment achievements in Oregon communities. The award honors individuals and groups that have implemented innovative yet practical remediation projects that stimulated economic development through job creation or retention or addressed a critical community development need. The selection criteria of the award focus on two primary goals, one being balance of economic and quality of life improvements to the local community and significant environmental gain. Each award-winning project highlights one or all of the goals associated with the state's brownfield mission, which is protection of the human health and the environment, enhanced collaboration and communication among essential partners to facilitate cleanup and reuse, strengthen economic marketplace by bringing industrial and commercial brownfield sites back into production for uses and sustained reuse throughout development of the brownfields to meet and enhance communities' long-term quality of life. So the award presented there was actually created by a glassblower artist named Kelly Howard in Lincoln City. And Kelly's a member of the Jennifer Sears Glass Foundry. And the foundry is actually has a brownfield redevelopment of an old car dealership. It was the motor garage, this car dealership. So it had impacted groundwater, impacted soil issues. So Business Oregon helped them in the cleanup of this and redevelopment into a productive piece of the community. I'd definitely like to recognize the partnership, of course, the innovation and leadership of the city of Astoria. Recology Western Oregon, the Astoria School District, and of course, Columbia Memorial Hospital. So it was my pleasure, my honor to receive this award on behalf of you all this May at the Brownfields Award. And I'd also like to note that this project also received a national Brownfield Award from the EPA. So you've got a big spotlight here in Astoria. So congratulations.
Okay, we got to go to work on that glass case. Thank you very much. North Coast Crisis Resource Center is Warren Zimmerman here? I don't see him. Okay. And next then is the Scandinavian Immigrant Park proposal. Lauren?
Yeah, Pierre.
Former counselor.
Former counselor.
Lauren Matthews.
Lauren Matthews, here as president of the Historic Scandinavian Heritage Association. And over here I have Judy Lampy, who did a lot of help with the concept here that we're going to be talking about. So we start through this and have a few other people out here with the with our group that's here to support us tonight. So we move through these slides. Janet also has done a lot of the work and got the slides over, so I really appreciate her work on Carol Wakestead back there has been our treasurer for a number of years and really was kind of started on this whole thing. We're calling the project From Scandinavia to Astoria, and this is just some of the old pictures here to kind of get it focused in, but you can see a lot of the pictures from the past of some of the groups that were here. Give you a little bit of who we are. We're a nonprofit partner of the Astoria Scandinavian Midsummer Festival Association. And I won't read all this. Our mission is to basically to preserve the Scandinavian heritage through education and show our culture here. Our main activity has been, and this next year will be our 50th anniversary of the festival, and our main activity has been the Scandinavian Midsummer Festival, although the Show You the Heritage Association supports that. So, next slide. From Scandinavia to Astoria, Immigrant Park, some of the pictures of when all the early Scandinavians came here. Next slide. Okay, there's some more. See how they gathered at various functions and that. Next one. Before I go into this one, I do want to go back to something more wanted to say. What the Heritage Association is, we had the Scandinavian Midsummer Festival. We were not a 501c3, we were a 501c4. About 3 years ago, we worked with a lawyer to get us a 501c3 designation so that we can collect the money and then support the parts of the festival that actually come on that would fit under a 501c3, such as bringing musical groups every year from Scandinavia to here. So we want to build a low maintenance permanent monument. I want to emphasize that. Create a visible monument in a public location with lots of foot traffic, close to the regional attractions, easily accessible, close to parking, and would educate the public about our heritage. Celebrate and remember the community's roots in Scandinavian values and traditions. Next slide. One of the things I want to go through with, a little bit, this would honor the immigrants that came here, and just some facts that we have is, in the early years in the 1870s, there was very few people who identified as being from Scandinavia. But in the late 1800s and early 1900s, how many were there? 47 Scandinavians identified as Scandinavians in 1870. By 1910, the census here was 9,599 residents, and approximately 35% of those identified as being Scandinavian at that time. So significant amount of them. And they were, came here and settled as loggers, fishermen, farmers, domestics, cannery workers, carpenters, and small business owners. In building a low-maintenance permanent monument, we want to work with the Arts Authority Parks and Recreation Department through their planning process to get their input and approval for the design, create a visible monument set in a public location, and We're going a little bit into the sites on this next one. We had all of our sites, and there were six sites that we looked at and worked with the Parks and Recreation. They suggested some various sites. We had some sites in mind. And so we're working that, and part of this is that Rotary had recently removed the wooden viewing platform from the site, this site here on 16th Street, bottom of 16th Street. This would not be a new park, but we are looking to enhance the present park that is there. We have these pictures down here. I know you can't see them. I don't know if you saw them before, but some designs of the park that Judy was going to. But does that make sense where we're talking about that? It's sort of a triangle piece right down here, just as you're coming into Astoria, right along the Riverwalk, between the Riverwalk and the highway there on Marine Drive, and from 16th Street to about 14th Street, taking in that area by what had been the England Marine and their parking lot down. So that is the area that we're talking about. Well, the site, we like that one best. We did feel that this also fills another need for the city besides helping to do something with this space that they've been maintaining. And one of the things in the adoption of the Parks and Rec Board, one of the recommendations was that you're a little short, overly too many parks in the area, I think, for the most part, but short on the urban park downtown that would be accessible for gathering spaces, you know, from anywhere from a third to 3 acres, developed. Visitors would tend to be those already in the neighborhood for other purposes, such as shopping, work, dining, and those kind of things. We had some suggestion of the Heritage Square over here. Could fulfill some of the need, but that was everything going on there. We really kind of like this down here where it's green and close to the river, because most of the Scandinavian do this through logging or fishing, do associate with the river. Let's see. I'm going to now kind of turn it over to Judy, because she's the one who did all this design here. And you see some of the things down here, some of the drawings that were preliminary to it. So, Judy.
Hi, my name's Judith Lampe, and I'm a member of the committee. I'm also the president of the United Finnish Kabbalah Brothers and Sisters. Most of you know us as the Finnish Brotherhood and our beloved Suomi Hall, which will be celebrating 130 years in Astoria this November.
Great, and could you just give us your address too for the minutes?
My home address?
Yeah.
Okay, 605 Alternate Highway 101, Warrenton, Oregon, 97146.
Thank you.
I'm very excited to be here tonight to make this presentation to you on behalf of our committee. You know, I just want to point out to Columbia Memorial Hospital, the Finnish Brotherhood was instrumental in right after the 1912 flu epidemic that killed many Astorians, and helping found the healthcare system here in Astoria. Beginnings of Columbia Memorial Hospital. Okay, the footprint of the park, Lawrence already described the location, the People's Park. And the park will be bordered on the north side by the Riverwalk, the trolley tracks, and the waterfront trail. And then on the south side, Marine Drive, and the entrance of downtown Astoria. And the concept is from Scandinavia to Astoria. So there'll be two large circular cement pads. The first one depicting Scandinavia, it'll have the design of all the Scandinavian countries in the cement with their American name, their English name, and their Scandinavian name. In the center of that will be a maypole, a very large maypole, made out of some type of material that won't degrade in our weather. And there'll be a large arch which will welcome, you know, as you drive into Astoria Marine Drive, you'll see this large arch which will say from Scandinavian to Astoria. And the flags of the Scandinavian countries will be put on that arch at special times. We don't want the wind constantly having to replace the flags. It'll be of a Scandinavian design. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Scandinavian design. It's very simplistic, just very good looking. Okay, between the paths, there'll be a short wide path from a plaza near the east end of the park. And this narrow pathway meanders through the trees to the west with benches that'll be located as part of the path and will reduce the need for weed eating. Most of the existing trees and shrubs will remain. The parking lot will remain, and there were concrete steps that went from the river walk to the park. Those would have to be reinstalled. I understand they were taken out because they weren't safe anymore. Am I correct? The main feature of the park is that it's visible from the street is the welcoming arch. A second welcome arch might be located on the river walk side of the park. The plaza, and I do want to say plaza because we feel that's very important. We already talked about the paths and the first pad. Okay, there'll be five granite panels on the east side of the first pad, which we colored representations of the flags of Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, and Sweden. Interpretive panels will explain the significance of Scandinavian immigrants to the North Coast. The theme of the first pad is from Scandinavia, and we said our last goodbyes, because so many Scandinavians left their beloved country in hope of work. The pathway leading to the second Pegasus is etched with symbols of trains, ships, and water to represent the mostly widely used methods of travel used by the immigrants to reach Astoria. The second circular pad represents to Astoria. We came to work. Etched into the concrete is a simplified map of Astoria showing the traditional Scandinavian neighborhoods. Four or more granite panels featuring bas relief sculptures depicting the typical immigrant professions such as fishing, logging, cannery workers, merchant, dairy workers, and maids. Okay, the interpretive panel explains the neighborhoods and professions of early immigrants. Are we supposed to be on a different slide now? No? Okay. Interpretive panels explain the neighborhoods and the professions of the early immigrants. The pathway continues to the west. We'll have short curved concrete benches and informational panels with symbols and information about Scandinavian influences and contributions to the community. Plans may expand if donations are more generous. There will be several opportunities for donor contributions to be acknowledged. The style of the arch is intended to reflect the simple elegance of modern Scandinavian design. The arch will be inscribed from Scandinavia to Astoria, and the flags will be flown on special occasions, the week preceding Scandinavian Midsummer Festival, and for special Scandinavian Lodge celebrations. The Scandinavian community will be responsible for mounting the flags. Tiles under the arch will be inscribed with welcome in all five Scandinavian languages. Okay, there will be four or more panels. We'll show typical professions of early immigrants and demonstrate that the early immigrants came here to work. Many left Scandinavia because of inheritance practices that left the farm entirely to the eldest son. If donations are especially generous, there might be freestanding elevated sculptures with several slightly larger than life figures. Another optional sculpture is a dock with several steamer trunks on it. And the last screen shows the committee members and representations of all the different lodges that are located here in Astoria. All of the Scandinavian countries are represented by local lodges. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or?
I'm going to say we do have a website too that we have listed. Just go to from Scandinavia2Astoria.org.
Mayor, if I might, I think once you noted, Warren, on this last slide, if you want to talk a little bit about the Oregon Community Foundation grant, which you received to get you this far?
Yes, we received, $2,500 from the Oregon Community Foundation to fund the start of this, and that's what we've been working off of to get the conceptual drawings here, and we hope to still have time before that grant runs out to possibly print some brochures. If we get an okay on this, we can print brochures up to get the word out on this. And we are somewhat connected also through some people who have been down from the Portland area. So we're connected with some of the Portland area people. Questions?
Any questions or comments?
We do have an irregular agenda item, two parts about direction for possible Scandinavian immigrant monument. We'll be discussing it again.
So I think there's some questions of the committee about their project. I think this would probably be an appropriate time. They're pitching State Councilor Herzing. There is an agenda item where we're going to be asking for some direction to staff. I think that there are follow-up questions, you know, maybe still be able to have them then as well.
I know one of the main things is, you know, how is this going to be maintained, whatever. We're really, Parks and Rec is already having to maintain this area. And we're trying to build a monument that will be low maintenance and probably maybe enhance or make their job easier down there rather than harder. But we're more than willing to, of course, we need to work with the Parks and Recreation.
Lauren, an enhancement to the site, one that we've provided just temporarily the past summer has been, we've had a porta potty there, but I think possibly a city nonprofit partnership to get in a Portland loo in this location, maybe back along the Patrick kind of thing. We could call it a Scandi loo rather than a Portland.
Maybe it could work.
That would really be a community service, and we found out that we do need this sort of thing. This would be a good chance when you're doing this kind of installation, possibly splitting the cost of the Portland loo between the city and the group would be a real service to the community, so maybe that would be part of the discussion.
We'd be willing to look at that.
All right, thanks. I like where you put the finish flag right on top there.
My father was the artist that made your conceptual drawing, Roger McKay.
Yes.
It's a beautiful concept there.
Can you pass that towel to you?
Well, I do graphic design on a computer, not by hand like he does. So I'd like to think a little bit of it rubs off.
The nice job you did on this.
Later on tonight, we'll be formally looking at whether or not to approve this concept. I see in here mention of the Adopt a Park program. Is the Scandinavian Heritage Association planning on adopting this park or doing anything further besides these enhancements in terms of long-term maintenance?
I think at this point we're looking at just trying to enhance the park. If you look at the average age of our group, I don't know how many years we can guarantee out there. So I don't want to speak for the rest of them. I guess Layla's here. She's head of the Midsummer Festival, and she's younger. But anyway, that's something we would really have to look at, how that would even work or how we could do anything along that line. It's a very good question. I just don't know that we've got that part out there. This really started next year being our 50th. We wanted to, over the years, we've talked about various projects all the way from, at one time, you know, just doing a set of flags at the edge of town. We kind of rejected the idea. Really, some couple people that wanted to do that. From the standpoint, we felt that story was more than just Scandinavia. So we didn't want to put up, at the edge of town, only the Scandinavian flags and forget everybody else. So that was sort of put aside. You know. So we want to do this, and we would like to, by next year, festival time in June, to at least have something started there. It may not be able to be finished. That may be asking too much, but at least get started. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's what I can give you at this point.
Would you be asking for any taxpayer money, any money from the city to construct this park?
Only if you offer. Yeah, I did ask the question, you know, if there was anything that could be, you know, under the urban renewal plans or anything like that. But no, we're looking to raise the funds.
And when you say low maintenance, how do you think that the maintenance for your planned park would compare to what we're doing with the property right now?
Well, right now you've got trees and grass and that, so I think this would create a spot where people come, set, enjoy, and cut down on some of the grass maintenance, you know, that's there. However much that would be, but that's certainly something we need to look at, you know, how much it would take and what kind of materials as we move along with it that we can propose for that, so that the materials will be good and not be able to be damaged by man was very easy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one more question.
Sure.
Being that you are a former city councilor, you know this city really well, and you're on the budget committee, is there a drawback for the city?
I don't see any right now. I really don't. Mainly because, you know, if you take the platform, my memory goes way back, but the platform was put down there by the Rotary Club that was recently torn down, but really started out as being part of what the, you might remember, is the old Barossi plan, which was a waterfront plan with several little parks along the way. And part of that was there was a was this platform down there, along with they had one at one time with the port. And so it started this whole riverfront vision plan. And so this was part of it. And I think that now that that is brought away and gone, we'd like to make something in there that's going to be more permanent and long lasting.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Lauren. And we may have more questions for you when we get to the
now, let's stick around.
Final presentation. Thank you. Thank you both. Okay, and next item is the presentation on the Waterfront Bridges Replacement Project.
So Cindy Moore is going to come forward to discuss this project. This is, we have in a circumstance on, there's two presentations tonight which correlate to two different agenda items which are going to be discussed later on. We're asking that this portion of the presentation focus on the long-term replacement rebuilding project for the street ends, which are between 6th and 11th Street. And we have some 30% design concepts which have been developed, which Cindy's going to go over and try to get some feedback from the council tonight. So Cindy.
Thank you. Cindy Moore, City Support Engineer. Here to give you an update on the Waterfront Bridges Replacement Project, and I'm going this way because I'm going to point. I just want to set the stage of the vicinity of this project. As Brett mentioned, there's other work that we will be talking about, so I want to focus your attention for this presentation to the ends of the streets, 6th through 11th Streets. We'll be replacing six individual projects where the roadway leaves solid ground and then meets private piers. It's a rather small area at each of the ends of these streets. It's not the area in between. And if you recall, we got a funding from ODOT to cover 90% of this project, so it's moving forward. We just received the 30% design package from the consultant. And it's a rather daunting package that's over 1,200 pages of technical information. that the city staff will be reviewing and ODOT will be reviewing, and we will be relying heavily on their specialists to help us review the structural components, bridge, environmental. But we have a number of city staff that will be devoted to looking at that package. It includes information, preliminary plans, cost estimates, some construction sequencing schedule, as well as stormwater report, existing utility identification, all that kind of technical information. So we're glad to have reached this mark, but it's going to be a busy month looking through that information. So we just wanted to update you at this point. On your consent calendar is an item to approve an amendment and a new agreement with ODOT for right-of-way services. This is a standard process. We did it with both the Franklin Bridge project and the Irving Bridge project. It's they like to have this separate stage where when we get to the 30%, they authorize these services. And what right-of-way services is any easements, be it temporary construction easements or permanent easements that we need for this project, will be formalized under the right-of-way services. And we expect at each of these six bridge locations to have easements. The professional services include appraisals, surveys, all the legal documents that will be required, and then negotiating with the private property owners for compensation. One of the fun things that came out of our 30% is the consultant was, as part of their scope, required to create three computer rendered drawings, three of the six street ends, so that we can better communicate with the general public about what it's gonna look like in the end. And it's fun to see this is what our future holds. So we did 8th, 10th, and 11th streets. What these are supposed to show you is kind of an overall view of what the changes are going to be. I would encourage you not to focus in on too many of the details, but look at it as an overall picture. So you can see we're going to gain on 8th Street. We have a sidewalk here, the concrete bridge, get some asphalt, and then the railing, they've shown it to as we've discussed before, it's going to be metal, the color to blend in with the wooden railings there. One of the parts that we get to have a little bit more artistic flair and input is the lighting and the pedestals that are shown. Those will show up at each of the street ends. This is not the final design. They put in a placeholder. We'll be working through what kind of enhancements we can do there, what appropriate lighting we should be using, the style of lighting to be consistent with the historic feel of the waterfront, of the working waterfront. So we'll be taking input on those items. And that's 8th Street.
So Cindy, if you could, maybe use these graphics to maybe show the extent of the improvements to the north and where the waterfront bridges end. I know that we get a lot of questions as to does the bridge go all the way out to the water or how far?
Sure. So all of the bridges will go to the north side of the trolley line. So this one's a little hard to see because of the perspective. The other ones will be a little bit easier, but these two are your two trolley lines. And it goes about 5 feet on the other side of the trolley rail. And we're at the limits of the right-of-way, which is from this building to the back of the sidewalk. In this case, 8th Street is in terrible shape. So this isn't bridge right here, really the bridge is right here. But they will destroy that street with their construction equipment, so we're showing them there'll be asphalt there. Okay. Let's look at 10th Street, because it's a different view. So we have, you can see better where it goes here, beyond the rail. And they used with their graphic skills, showed that there's gonna be some new wood planking where you have to take some up to connect to the existing structures. We'll have sidewalk on both sides. here. Again, don't get too fixated on this orientation of the pedestals and the lighting. That will change. Certainly take input on if anybody has any opinions on that. If there's any questions on 10, we'll go to 11 here. 11th Street, similar feel. This one, even to city staff's surprise, it doesn't go as far as we expected. We expected it to be closer to this handrail here. But 11th Street, there were actually two tracks at one point. And so the structure is really pretty small. It doesn't go as far north. There will be this new sidewalk here, the railing. Another thing that to point out on this one is it shows the improvements stopping here at the right-of-way on the east side. As you know, we asked ODOT for additional funding to improve the east, that east connection from the bridge to solid ground, which off the top of my head, I'm not remembering that it's about 60 feet, I believe, maybe 80. And we were denied that request. So we will be coming up with a strategy to make sure that that we can improve that so it can not be load restricted once this project's done. Are there any specific questions on the intermediate kinds?
Cindy, when Parks and Rec was doing their wayfinding project, there was quite a lot of research on streetlight design and that sort of thing. Maybe you can get some information from Angela about that. I'm sure it's still in the data bank somewhere.
Yes. And
we've been
coordinating with Angela, and then there's a trail plan that will also be making sure we're consistent with.
And Councilor Herzog, what we're looking for is you know, these funds aren't going to be able to go towards implementing the Trails Master Plan, but if there are components, then maybe we get, let's say, some footings or foundations for what would be implemented through a separate funding process. We're looking for those opportunities as a part of this project.
A great chance to put in the actual street numbers down there, because that was part of, you know, the wayfinding was people are down there, they're off the boat. They have no idea what cross street they're coming by, so this is a great opportunity to implement some of those ideas while we're doing the religious things.
Exactly. Okay, we'll move on to the funding or the project cost update. With the 30% design, we have a more formal cost estimate for this project. All the estimates we received before was in response to some questions by ODOT, and the design team was pushed to give us information. This is now the published estimate. So on the left is our what the project has been awarded, what it was originally, the original estimate was, and what the grant is that we have from ODOT. When we asked ODOT for that extension on 11th Street, we also asked for a funding increase for the entire project. They denied it because they wanted us to wait until we were further along on the project, because it was a bit premature, being pushed by them and also by us, to ask for that money before they got to see this design package. Now that once we get through the review of this technical information with the ODOT staff, there'll be a better time for us to ask for the additional money when they've agreed upon a lot of the base work that's been done that we'll move forward with. What I want to point out is that we're getting to a point where city staff's going to be uncomfortable if it gets any higher, because of we're using the STP funds to pay back a loan.
Maybe explain what STP funds.
Oh, okay. Service Transportation Program funds. They're state funds we get from the state fuel tax that then they distribute to the local agencies. Typically ours is at least $100,000, to generally more. So we're looking at an annual payment of $79,000 for this cost estimate that's nearly $12 million. $12 million total project cost, city match of $1,224,000. we will be working in this 30% stage to push the consultants and ODOT to help us reduce the cost. And it would be our goal to not, it will not go over this $12 million. We just really can't afford it. We can't use up that buffer. Are there any questions on that?
Cindy, thank you for the work that you've done with the consultants on the 30% design. You know, I was very concerned that this was going to be a bit more destructive to the original character of the waterfront than these pictures show. So that's great. And the more we go down that road, the better we do.
Yeah, we found in the past with our other projects that it helps for people to visualize the project. Most people can't read plans, and it helps like me and our team too to see what's coming and to help when we get into the details of some of the aesthetic elements.
Cindy, can you explain to me, because I just don't understand, why out of 11th Street it doesn't include that second track?
It's because when we went through our evaluation of what the bridge was, that we came to a consensus with ODOT that is the north side of that first track. And that track, the double track, is really only at 11th Street, so it's a unique configuration.
What supports it underneath, not the bridge?
Underneath the other track?
No, underneath the planks. What would be beneath? We're replacing the bridges, is that correct?
Correct.
And that other track is not on the bridge.
Right.
It is on...
It's its own structure.
Okay.
That is considered part of that private dock area that services Pier 11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still not sure I understand what I'm looking at.
It has to do with how the underneath the boards, it's hard to tell from the top, but underneath how the different elements come together. There's the bridge, and there's the trestle, and then there's another trestle, and the private dock is built over that other
other trestle,
that other part, yes. That leg that came off. So it's not visible. You can't see the railing now because of the way that it's been modified for the private dock.
Okay.
It just affects the extents of on the surface, how far that one goes.
Okay.
And could you explain again the rights of way? I mean, whose rights of way are these? And is this just to let businesses that are out there get by this construction or what? I don't understand.
Can you go back to the first?
So Mayor, are you asking about where is the location of the public right-of-way or the agenda item that we're asking for right-of-way services?
Well, I was going to remove item 6D in the consent calendar because I still don't understand the term rights-of-way.
So maybe, Cindy, if you can maybe explain the extent of the public right-of-way and then discuss the services that would be included by the ODOT amendment.
Okay. So the right-of-way that we talk about, the city right-of-way, is generally north and south, back side of the sidewalk. Varies a little one way or another, but that's generally what we use as our right-of-way. And extends out into the water. Beyond the north side of the trestle is we consider a private structure. And so that's our right-of-way. That's city-controlled right-of-way. What ODOT refers to as their right-of-way services is negotiations with private property owners to use their private property for whatever we might need for the project. One of the things, for example, one of the things that we're looking into is where to stage some of our equipment and materials, and negotiating with possibly some parking lot areas, and that would be private property. So the federal funding would require that we approach, that there's a legal mechanism for doing that. We can't, I can't just go and negotiate with an individual property owner. It has to be a licensed professional that goes and negotiates with them and does the official appraisals and gives them the legal documents to make sure that the private property owner's rights are reserved and we're not the government isn't taking advantage of private property owners. Makes sense. So they're using right-of-way in a little bit different way than we, when we talk about right-of-way in the city.
Mayor, I would just a note, when Cindy was talking about the location of the numbered street right-of-way that head into the river, this is probably one of the most complex issues that we face and we're continuing to face in our community. When you look at those numbered streets, those right-of-way were dedicated to the public. They're public access. As Cindy noted, the city maintains up to a certain point on these bridges, and then the docks heading north are privately owned and maintained. So as Councilor Ward was stating, at 11th Street, you know, what happens north of that track, that private property is actually maintained by Steve Allen, who owns properties on both sides. So, the Allens cannot prohibit public access. They can't privatize that because it's public right of way. The public has the right to access it, but it's maintained by property owners. To make it even more complex, the area underneath those structures that's submerged is actually owned by the state of Oregon. So there's even more complexity to go there, and it's something that we're having to deal with quite frequently, in a lot of these areas.
Okay, I was thinking that right of way had to do with the citizens' right of way, or the, but it's really the city's right to go onto this private property in order to stage forth construction. Okay. Thank you. Hey, any other questions? Thank you very much, Cindy. Appreciate it. Okay, the next item on our agenda is the consent calendar. These are just considered routine items, and they'll be adopted by one motion unless a member of the city council requests an item to be removed, or unless someone in the audience has requested removal.
Well, we're removing E.
We were removing E, correct. So E is not being considered this evening.
Any council rules? Anybody from the public?
There actually was a request for E as well, but since it's been removed by staff, it will be dealt with another time. And we contacted that citizen to try and coordinate.
I move that we adopt consent calendar items number 6, A, B, C, D, and F.
Second.
Roll call, Chief Johnston.
Councilor Price.
Aye.
Councilor Herzig.
Aye.
Councilor Nemlow.
Aye.
Councilor Ward.
Aye.
Mayor Lemire.
Aye. Thank you. Regular agenda item, the first one is the direction from the council for the possible Scandinavian immigrant monument that we talked about before that Lauren presented. So
I'm going to give a brief introduction and actually turn it over to Angela Cosby to give a little bit more info. So including in your memorandum for this item is some background information regarding People, Places, Park. And Mr. Matthews actually talked about a little bit of that history with the Rotary Club having built that platform several years ago and it being removed. And as you heard, members of the Scandinavian community are working to develop this monument. This request was brought to the Parks Board in June, and there was a presentation by the Astoria Scandinavian Heritage Association. The Parks Board ultimately concluded that the association would need to not only fundraise for construction, but also for the monument's ongoing care and maintenance, and then unanimously agreed to recommend the monument project to City Council contingent upon a formal park adoption agreement. I'm going to ask Angela to talk a little bit about this concept of a park maintenance agreement. That's something that's coming out of the park's master plan. So the council has a little bit more details to what that would include. But tonight it's recommended the council consider the Parks Board's recommendation and open direct staff to prepare an agreement with the Estuary Scandinavian Heritage Association. And then it was, again, that was for following the Parks Board's recommendation, we following adoption of an Adopt-a-Park program. Would note that both the Adopt-a-Park program and the final association agreement would need to be brought back to council for final ratification, if that's the direction you wanted to have. So, Angela?
The first time a Adopt-a-Park program has been discussed with council is actually back in November 2013 when we were establishing the chip-in program and talking about the different levels of chip-ins or different levels of which the community could help contribute to the park system, whether it's individuals coming out, hosting parties or gatherings like we have with our monthly chip-in cleanups, friends of parks like we've seen some, like the Friends of McClure Park rise up, and then also a formal Adopt-a-Park program, which we currently have with the Holiday Inn Express for a portion of the Maritime Memorial Park, and then also the Friends of the Storia Column for the care of Astor Park and the Column, both of which are very successful. Adopt-a-Park programs can vary greatly. For example, with Maritime Memorial, that contract is different than the one that the Storia Column has, is you're dealing with a historic monument in one versus maintaining vegetation and a fountain in another. So it's hard to specify exactly what each individual contract would look at, but for the most part, adoptions are when an area business or organization takes on the routine care and maintenance and further improvements of a park site. So that's kind of a very broad view of it. In this current location, if an organization wanted to adopt People's Park without additions there, there would be the regular mowings, pruning of the vegetation, garbage, and then also for the care and maintenance of the restrooms there or within that park site. It is always optional bringing those contracts forward to council. What is included is, as well as working out with the individual parties, is as far as what those needs can be addressed and what different groups' skill levels are. But for the most part, it is inclusive of all care and maintenance. Does that answer your question as far as, or answer the question of what an Adopt-a-Park program would be? That it was identified in the master plan under section 6.2. I'm happy to answer any other questions as well as far as Park Board's recommendations.
And so, well, don't we have another couple of parks that are being maintained and improved by residents close to the park?
There are some. On more even occasions than I know, for example, Alderbrook Lagoon, there's a handful of neighbors down in the Alderbrook neighborhood that do come and care for that, not in an established formal manner. They just do it out of their own goodwill. But our formal programs that are having some type of documentation come forward are the Maritime Memorial and the Column.
Angela, some of us were down at the Holiday Inn over the weekend and seeing the partnership there, the maintenance of the riverwalk there is just really nice. I wish maybe we could lean on the Hampton Inn up here to adopt their part too. It's a world of difference. Obviously, the recommendation is going to take some working. I guess that the Scandinavian, they would have to say they will adopt a park if the city allows the installation of their memorial, and when their adoption would take place, so to speak, whether the groundbreaking or beginning as soon as the agreement is signed or when the memorial is completed, that's what things, the details can be worked out.
Correct.
And then, as I was saying, getting a Portland Lumen would be fantastic, and I know that we keep going back to the Promote Historia Fund, but I think this would be an excellent use for some Promote Historia funds to get a, and again, for people who don't know, the Portland Loo is a low maintenance, vandal proof. It's a well designed public restroom that is designed to defeat vandalism and that sort of thing. And I forget, was it about 90,000? I've lost track of the estimate.
You're going to be looking at about 105, 107, they were thinking.
Yeah. Because these are built to last. And again, it might be a really interesting partnership. Now, that would be a lot of bait sales, Norman, and And then, but you've got the Scandinavian dancers who could do the maintenance later on, not in the Luther. So I think this is a really interesting project. I think we were talking about, aside from the reduced landscaping, there will still be with any kind of cement structure, some pressure washing and regular maintenance issues. And I think, Kevin, with the flags, we'll have to get special permits because they will flap and flutter, won't they?
It's a national origin, so there's actually an exception in the zone.
Fantastic. I hope this works out because I think it'd be an excellent use of that area kind of thing. And I know that the Scandinavians, and I hope there'd be something at the time about the Finnish socialists in this as well. Really, that is part of what puts Astoria on the map, and our, the Gutter Party and all that sort of thing. It was that mentality that made Astoria such an open community back before we were the ones. So that's part of it. Anyhow, good luck with this. I think it's a great project. I hope it works out.
Any other comments?
Could I?
Yes, thank you.
When you make these agreements, if we come to, how many years out? How many years out are you on the agreements? For instance, at the Holiday Inn,
Brett would be able to answer that question better than me. How long have we been working with the Holiday Inn Express?
We've been working with them for about 5 years now. So.
But when you make the agreement, how?
Is that year to year?
So I'll tell you that what we've had so far has been really kind of an informal, more of an informal process. And I think that the intent of the Parks Master Plan, and again, this is where the Parks Board made a recommendation to the City Council as to what they felt was appropriate. It's ultimately up to the City Council as the policymakers to determine what is specifically appropriate for the city. I think the intent of the Parks Board's recommendation would be perpetual. Was that the end?
Correct. Yes, they were. The presentation came following just a few minutes after the Park Board recommended the master plan to City Council. So I pulled out from the minutes what was reported, and they had, although the project was well planned and a good example of repurposing an underutilized park, they had just voted to recommend to refrain from adding new parks, facilities, and services via the comprehensive plan, and that they were hesitant to recommend this addition until higher priority park projects were completed. So you can, when Park Board was talking about it, they were extremely supportive of wanting something like this to go in, but then also thinking we've been focusing so much on taking care of what we have and not adding more. This was, in my interpretation, this is their way of making the two balance, trying to move forward with a more sustainable vision.
Well, I think, Council, that pretty much sums up where I'm at with this, too. I think that it's well past time for there to be a Scandinavian Heritage Park in Astoria. And I'm surprised it wasn't the first thing in Heritage Park, but that's just the way the money rolls. And so that's
everybody.
But I'm very glad to see this happening, and I do hope it does happen. I do have a number of concerns. I think the Adopt-a-Park program is probably essential, and that it needs to be very long-term, because we have just agreed as council to adopt the Parks Master Plan, and I think it's not wise to make an exception just right off the bat. I have a couple of other concerns that really have to do with design, which I don't think is our purview, but I'll say them anyway. This park is, I think it's the only area on that side of Highway 30 coming into Astoria that has any trees at all. So I would really hate to lose that to a lot of hardscape. Hardscape is harder to maintain than a grassy area with trees. It's more susceptible to tagging and stickering, and it has to be washed and power washed and all of those things. So in your design elements, I would say that the closer you can stick to the Scandinavian concepts of minimalism and functionalism, the better off you will be, and to not think about adding other things as you go on. This is one of the few locations for a permanent restroom, but however, as I've just said, it's also one of the most pleasant looking areas when you come into town. I would hate to see I'm not looking forward to seeing a permanent restroom in that area, and I really don't see how it would fit with your design, so that's something to think about as well. And anyway, I think that's pretty much it, but I do think the adopt-a-park guidelines are essential.
At the first part of your presentation, you said that each of the adopt-a-park programs were negotiable and that each one would be different. I would hate to think that because we took such a hard line, we were able to kill adding a very nice new facility to Astoria. And the plan, I've, as you know, worked with Granite for a long, long time out of the weather, and it is not hard to maintain. It's much, much better than many other products you can see out there. So I think they had a great design, a good concept, and I would hate to chase them off over a few details on maintenance.
I've got a few questions. Are you finished, Councilor Warren?
Certainly.
Okay, thank you. Well, first of all, I'd like to declare a potential conflict just because my dad did the conceptual drawing, Roger McKay, but I don't think that, no matter how we vote, it's not going to have any financial impact on my family tonight. So I don't think it's a direct conflict. Few questions. Ms. Cosby, do you think that the proposed park enhancements would be tougher to maintain than what's there right now for the Parks Department? How would you say what's there now compares to what's proposed in terms of maintenance?
Right. It probably would, it would increase maintenance levels. For one reason is that the site, we're still going to be having grass on site. We're still going to be needing to bring mowers out to the site. So it will be adding an additional element of a few times a year needing to pressure wash, as well as we have been extremely lucky in Astoria with all of our pieces of art and monuments and not having graffiti, heavy graffiti on them yet. Hopefully this is the same case. So whatever vandalism did take place, there would be that addition as well. Overall, not a great amount of increase. We're probably talking a few additional days per year.
Okay, so really nothing significant then. And is this, can you refresh my memory, is this particular park under the tourist sites that we've contracted out regular maintenance for with Promote Astoria funds?
Yes, it is.
It is, okay. And if we were to approve this proposal and move forward, could you see those funds still being used for this site for maintenance?
I would hope so, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, thank you. You know, I was on the Citizens Advisory Committee for the Parks Master Plan, and, you know, I think the overarching theme was that we needed to take better care of what we already had before adding more. But Mr. Matthews brought up a really important point about the fact that this is not adding a park, that this is enhancing a park. And I do not think that the increased level of maintenance would be significant enough to turn our backs on this wonderful opportunity that the Scandinavian Heritage Association is offering us. I mean, you know, they've already, you know, launched plans for a wonderful park and say that they would come up with the money to execute it. And, you know, I don't really understand why we wouldn't enhance a park if we have somebody offering to help, especially if it's not going to significantly increase maintenance. It seems like it could be a real asset for the city.
I would want to add, if there's any community that has the requisite grit, the sisu, to see this through, I think it's the Scandinavian community. I don't think it could be turned over to better hands than a community that has been such a strong and determined part of Astoria for decades, not centuries. I agree with Councilman Engelbach.
And further, I'm a little confused because I understand the Parks Board's recommendation for this Adopt a Park program, but, you know, we heard from Mr. Matthews tonight that that's really beyond the scope of what, you know, is being proposed. So I think that we need to look at this as not including an Adopt a Park. You know, well, that would be nice. You know, if that's not something that's feasible for the Heritage Association, I think we need to look at these enhancements without the Adopt a Park program.
Angela, would this be a park that could also be used in the chip in program?
Yes, and we have in the Love Your Columbia chip in cleanups we've had along the Riverwalk. We have concentrated on that. Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't necessarily, it sounds like a lot of the maintenance will be done by this company, and with the assistance of a chip-in program, so it doesn't sound as though it's going to be a terrible burden on the Scandinavian Association.
Potentially, I would say council, Park Board's recommendation came prior to council authorizing the agreement with Greensmith to take care of our tourist-related sites. That is something, it's launching this week. So it's something still in the test phase that we're figuring out and seeing if that's a good fit for us.
I just hate to see it held up very long. I know you mentioned that it could be, you could bring plans to the council the first meeting in October.
That would, yes, looking at realistic timelines of what it would take to get agreements like that put forth, probably realistically the beginning of October, giving it 2 months to work on.
And then with that timeline, does the Scandinavian Festival group believe that they could move forward and have things moving along by the 50th anniversary of the 50th? Yeah.
Yes, I think we could. Probably the only timeline I worry about is, I'd ask Janet, we have to expend the funds that we have now, Janet, by October 1. And so part of that, what we had left, we were going to make up brochures and that. And I guess we thought it was going to go, we could go ahead and get some brochures printed up. The thought that if you present it early October, that we could be ready to go immediately. On the other hand, if something changed in there and we didn't make the agreement, then we'd probably have a lot of brochures to sell. That'd be my only thing on timeline. Other than that, we plan to, if we can get an agreement in October, we're certainly going to move ahead real quickly with brochures and everything to get out there. And we do have some people who have already stated they wish to donate to this project. So we're hoping, not knowing how many dollars we're going to need yet.
I just say that knowing that plans can be quite flexible and very different depending on the place. You don't have to foresee something that's very onerous at all or that changes much at all your plans. But I do think it's a good idea that we have that. I mean, Ms. Cosby did say that this would take an extra several days a year of maintenance. And given that we are looking at possibly selling parks or letting things go back to nature, we've talked about taking money away from the chamber and various, we're just kind of scrounging around for parks, that I think having at least a minimum sort of agreement in place would be the wisest way to go, if I could suggest that.
I think what's happening with McClure Park, the Friends of McClure Park, I think that might be the way to go. That's not as binding as an adopted park, but they've been fantastic with bringing events to that park, doing fundraisers, that kind of thing. So I would suggest possibly talking to the Scandinavian group about becoming, I don't know if we would have to rename it, Friends of People's Park or Friends of the Future, Scandinavian Tourism Park, that kind of thing, but I don't think the master plan was intended as a club to beat down community proposals like this. So I really think we need to be a little bit more flexible. And I would suggest rewording this, saying recommend and direct staff to prepare an agreement with ASHA, considering possible adoption of an Adopt-a-Park or Friends of Park program. And that wouldn't make it a requirement, but something that could be part of the discussion. Would Parks and Rec, as the manager, be comfortable with that revision of this recommendation?
What we're looking for is for your direction as the city council. We have the recommendation coming from the Parks Board. So,
but you're not looking for a formal motion.
Yes, we are. At a minimum, what I hear across the board from the council is the desire to move forward with the association and building the park here.
Absolutely.
And so, what we want to be able to have, and what Ms. Cosby and Mr. Matthews were talking about, is having some sort of agreement that spells out, some issues like design. I mean, there's some things, for instance, that this is going to have to go before the city's Historic Landmarks Commission. There's going to be some process that's going to have to be built in, and then it's going to be an agreement that spells out what are the requirements that are going to be needed at a minimum to be able to have this located here. And so at a minimum, we would be looking for that direction from council tonight as to whether or not it came before or after an Adopt-a-Park program. I'd be asking the council for their feedback on that.
Well, I love the idea. I think it's a great use of that park. I think it's terrific. The only thing is, I went against Norma Hernandez one time. I'm not doing that again. So I think, if the Parks Board, although the Parks Board recommended this prior to the Greensmith contract to take care of that park. So I'm not sure where we stand. I wish Norma was here because I don't want to step on the toes of the Parks Board. But on the other hand, I would like to see this go forward sooner rather than later. Will you be my go-between?
Well, Mayor, if it would help, I would make a motion. I would move that the Parks Director, Angela Cosby, form an agreement with the Scandinavian Heritage Association that works for both sides and bring it back to us.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Whatever we just did.
Yeah. I'm just waiting to see if I get an email from Norma. Okay, the next item is an ordinance approving the assignment of non-exclusive telecommunication franchise from Coastcom to Astound.
So ordinance number 16-03 was approved in March of this year, which provided a franchise agreement to Coastcom Incorporated for operation of their facilities within city rights of way. Astoria Broadband has entered into an agreement to purchase Coastcom and to acquire their assets and operate Coastcom Incorporated. It's been requested that the council consider assignment of the Coastcom franchise agreement to Astound Broadband. An ordinance which would approve this assignment was included with your packet. It's recommended tonight that the city council conduct the first reading of this proposed ordinance.
I move first reading.
Second. Ms. Brooks? No. We have to vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Could we have a first reading, Ms. Brooks?
An ordinance approving the assignment of a non-exclusive telecommunication franchise.
Thank you.
And then this will be brought back to your next meeting for the second reading. So.
Yeah, Item C is the Verizon wireless leases.
At your July 5th meeting, draft leases for the Verizon wireless project at Reservoir Ridge and a lease extension at Toscone was presented. And that was presented just to be able to try to get feedback as to whether council felt that it met the intent of your work session on this item, which was held a few months earlier. Council indicated that they believed the terms were supportive, and these leases were returned to Verizon with the inclusion of two items which were listed in the memorandum presented that night, and additionally, the council non-discrimination policy was included. I would note that the language for the non-discrimination policy was subsequently amended by the council at their next council meeting, at the council's next meeting. And the lease documents started to go through the signature process at Verizon in advance of that council meeting. It takes several weeks, so I think up to 6 weeks, to get signature from Verizon, and Verizon is hoping to be able to get moving on construction of the tower at Reservoir Ridge before the winter weather kicks in. And the policy, the non-discrimination policy is the council's policy, but what is proposed is that because the negotiations started before the change, that they go forward as presented tonight. Verizon has signed the two leases, and I would note that they have also included a right-of-way easement for Pacific Power, which would provide electricity to this facility. City Attorney Higginsgard has requested some changes to the Pacific Power easement document, specifically asking for clarification where the line would be placed in the respective tax lots. Right now, it's written as a blanket easement. It doesn't specify a specific area, and this is something that the city attorney and staff feel is necessary to be included. Additionally, Mr. Higginsgard it's not necessarily some concern, but wanted to make sure the council was clear with regard to some language with regards to a waiver of a right to a jury trial. I'm going to let Blair talk a little bit about this so that the council is just aware of what that concept means.
Well, these are actually issues that come up, unfortunately, once in a while when we have agreements that show up very late in the process. And I guess it was kind of late in the process that everybody remembered that they needed to have electricity there. But if you go to page 147 of your packet, you'll see a map there that shows the line that we're talking about. And that little dotted square piece of property is all city property. The described easement describes that entire piece of property plus a couple other lots that are outside that little square. Kind of concerned to me because easements such as this do have restrictions on the use, reasonable restrictions on the use that we can make use of the property. And so I think it'd be more appropriate for the city to obtain one way or the other a more specific property description and a smaller property description for the easement area itself. The jury trial issue was only raised by me because it's a somewhat unusual provision to appear in an easement. You don't have very many trials arising out of an easement. I just pointed it out. It's not something I would put in an easement document. It's something that I think was put in there because Pacific Power generally gets a lot of easements with private parties and wants to avoid jury trials. I have no problem with avoiding a jury trial. It's just that I like to have my clients know that they're waiving it. So since these issues were raised, I think last Thursday, late in the day, they get thrown on your lap rather than being hashed out back and forth between PP&L. But my recommendation would be that we approve the concept of this easement and allow staff to go back and perfect the property description slightly so that we're not tying up this entire parcel of property and restricting our use on it.
I believe we were told we don't have time to amend this contract in any way. the language of that non-discrimination. We don't have time to do that. Do we have time to do this?
This is a separate agreement. This is the agreement with PPL for the electrical power to the site.
All right, so this is not with Verizon.
And we could deal, we have local local representatives of PPL that we can hash this out.
Okay, thank you.
So I move we authorize the mayor and city manager to sign the leases with Verizon Wireless for facilities at Coxcomb and Reservoir Ridge and the Pacific Power right-of-way easement contingent on resolution of the city attorney's requested changes.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
I want to thank Chief Johnston for all his work in bringing this to fruition. Even though this gives Verizon a 25-year lease without rental during that time, we are still saving the city hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in doing this kind of thing. So well done, staff. Well done, Chief Johnston.
Okay, thank you. And then we have a resolution declaring an emergency and authorizing the award of a public improvement contract for the street and bridge repair work.
So earlier in the presentation portion of our agenda, we had Cindy Moore talking about the street end replacement project. And this was the bigger long-term project to replace the street ends at 6th through 11th Streets. As was brought forward in July, these street ends are inspected each year by ODOT to ensure that certain load ratings are in place to be able to accommodate trolley traffic as well as vehicular traffic through those areas. And there were deficiencies which were identified on those street ends, and as we noted, there needed to be some immediate repairs to be able to, for ODOT to keep those rights of way open to traffic. We have been working with ODOT while we've gone through the design phase and the process to secure a contractor, and we've been continuing to ensure safety through those areas as well. And what we have brought before you tonight is the contract to complete the repair work for this set of bridges. And Nathan, I'll let you talk maybe a little bit about the work that's going to be done. And then he's going to turn it back over to me because I want to be able to talk about the combined fiscal impact of this project as well as the associated need to repair the trestles along the riverfront as well. And we mentioned back in July that staff would be working to be able to spell out how this work could be funded, and I'll be doing that after Nathan talks about this specific work.
Thank you, Brett. Again, Nathan Crater, Assistant City Engineer. Madam Mayor and City Council, I'm going to start off by having Susan just flip to the next slide. We've been talking about a lot of projects that kind of overlap, and to try to provide maybe a little bit of clarity so late in the meeting, I know, it's can kind of be a confusing subject. Prepared this graphic. So Cindy Moore gave a presentation on the waterfront bridge replacement. That's the new structures that are going to be funded through that generous grant from ODOT. What I will be kind of detailing is the highlighted red portion, which are the immediate street end repairs that are needed, totaling about $206,000, and I'll go into that briefly. And then I'll turn it back over to Brett. He'll chat just briefly about the trolley trestle and river trail maintenance. And that's identified in the green. It kind of gives you an idea of where each one of those project limits lies. Again, because they're all somewhat intertwined, and just wanted to at least make an initial effort to provide some clarity to that before I kind of dig into this. So with that being said, I had a special council meeting in July, last month, staff asked City Council for authorization to execute a contract with OBEC Consulting Engineers for design services associated with the emergency street end repairs. Those were needed, as Brett mentioned. ODOT identified some deficiencies in this year's inspection report that were critical enough that if we didn't get right on top of them, they were tentatively going to ask us to close those structures August 1st. So we're obviously beyond that point. City staff has done a number of things since that meeting. First of all, we actually did start construction with our own staff. Operations division staff was able to complete some of the critical shimmy work, which was kind of within our wheelhouse, something that we were capable of doing. The second thing we did was implement a weekly inspection program utilizing our structural engineer and also city staff, something we discussed previously as a possible mitigation measure to help us kind of span this gap before major construction starts. OBEC completed the design work. City staff prepared a request for quotes and then sent that out to a couple of local contractors for consideration. We received two quotes in that effort, one from Bergerson Construction for almost $197,000, and one from Columbia Dock Works totaling $153,000. Unfortunately, the quote provided by Columbia Dock Works had to be considered non-responsive because they are not a pre-qualified ODOT contractor. And because of that, this work does require that pre-qualification. We had to toss that number out. So moving forward with Bergerson, basically noting that number was a little bit higher than we were hoping for, we engaged in kind of one final value engineering push, utilizing some of the knowledge that Greg Morrill and Bergerson gained from that bid process, and then going back to OBEC another time and saying, hey, you know, what can we do to reduce some cost here? Between that effort, we were able to shave off about $25,000. So it puts the contract total at $170,989. And so that's why you're going to see that discrepancy between the initial quote Bergerson provided and the contract value we're asking for award on tonight. So with that number, we are also recommending a 20% contingency for construction to account for unforeseen conditions. That brings us up to that $206,000 number you see up on the screen. That's an estimated construction budget. Hopefully we'll be able to maybe implement some more cost-saving measures and either stay at or maybe get that number down a little bit. But this is kind of what we're looking at to approach construction in a reasonable manner on those emergency repairs. So because that number is significantly above the $100,000 threshold for public bidding, the city attorney has recommended that council adopt a resolution, classifying this as an emergency situation prior to awarding this construction contract to Bergerson Construction. Of course, funding, that's an important piece of it. The funding for this can be provided in the capital improvement fund, but it should be noted that a budget amendment may be necessary before the end of the fiscal year to provide this funding. We hope to, if approved tonight, be able to get Bergerson Construction going almost immediately, potentially even tomorrow, and have the work completed within 30 to 45 days. So to summarize, we're asking, recommending the council adopt a resolution calling this an emergency, and then award a construction contract for the emergency street end repairs to Bergerson Construction in the amount of $170,989.
Does that take two motions or one?
I have a question. So real quick, there's a question here. So does it take two motions? Mary city attorney, it can be one motion, correct, to approve the resolution and also the contract with Bergerson Construction. It would need to be a roll call, but it could be taken care of in one motion. I would note real quick for the record, the amount that's included in the resolution includes the 20% contingency, because we plan to have that built into the full resolution. But again, the contract amount was the $170,989.
So is that what you want the contract for?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So it'd be ultimately it'd be approving the resolution, declaring the emergency, and award the contract for street and bridge repair to Bergerson Construction in the amount of $170,989.
So, Vince, Mayor has a question.
Yeah, I had a question. The red rectangles up there, is that the same as what we just voted on?
in the consent, or what we heard in the consent calendar, the waterfront bridges replacement, is that the same thing?
It's associated with the same project that will serve to replace those with modern structures. However, that particular item, I believe, dealt with right-of-way services, which is a service connected to that project. It's not specifically related to
let me clarify, Mayor. The presentation which Ms. Moore presented earlier was discussing the replacement project, which will happen hopefully starting next year. And also the consent item was dealing with the services which were needed to secure easements and access on private property. So that's all tied with the long-term replacement project. What is being brought to you tonight is the interim fix to be able to bridge the gap on the bridges, to be able to keep those existing bridges open, to be able to allow for trolley service through this area, and also to be able to allow continued full access to those waterfront bridges. And I would note that this amount, the contract between $170,989 up to the $206,000, these are going to be interim repairs. These are materials that would be removed at the time of reconstructing these bridges in the future. However, I would note that this bridge project is going to be constructed in a two-phase scenario, where we're going to be doing the odd streets first, starting hopefully next year, and then the even streets. So we need these bridges to be able to continue to provide access for up to a couple of years.
Okay, I guess what I'd like to know is this underneath the trestles, and is it also surface, both?
Yeah, this work is primarily the support members underneath. Most of the decking work we handle in-house with Public Works crews.
Okay.
Essentially, as I understand it, ODOT told us that they will shut these down if we don't start repairs immediately, which is why we were looking at these sort of an interim until the full-scale replacement comes in. We have to do some maintenance, otherwise ODOT says they will close these to traffic. Is that correct?
That is correct, and they get their direction from the Federal Highway Administration. So basically, they're the local regulation arm of FHWA.
Mr. Crater, where are we at right now in the status of ODOT shutting our waterfront down? They had said August 1st, and is it because of our efforts that we've made so far that they haven't, or are they going to do it tomorrow, or what do you think?
So, very, very good question. Basically, kind of the plan we put into place to have weekly inspections, potentially pick those up to more frequent if needed, depending on what we see. Providing reports back on a weekly basis, and then also being able to implement some of the easier repairs, take off some of that low-hanging fruit by doing some shimming with our crews, has been enough in order to kind of span the gap. And like I said, if proof tonight, we can potentially start that construction work, the repair work this week, and so we can basically get that underway and show more movement on this. So, right now we're pretty comfortable, and I think ODOT is as well, that we're making every effort we can to move forward in a safe, a responsible manner. And so we don't anticipate any disruptions.
Thank you. Mr. City Manager, how will we pay for this? It's coming from the Capital Improvement Fund, but does that mean that we need to take away from another project?
So we have done, well, how about if I can maybe move into the next portion, which is talking about the trolley trestle maintenance and the $450 number, which is up on the screen. Since your last council meetings, Public Works, Parks, and Finance staff, Ms. Brooks, and I have been working to look at what are eligible types of funding mechanisms to do all of this work. First of all, with regards to the immediate street repairs that are needed, that would not be an eligible Promote Astoria Fund item because of the longevity of the materials that are going to be in place. And also, this is maintaining a piece of our road infrastructure, and so it was determined that that was the appropriate place to take that money from if the council were to move forward. Ms. Brooks conducted financial analysis, taking a look at the money that we have on hand within the Capital Improvement Fund, as well as anticipated revenues that are throughout this fiscal year. We're going to be receiving funds over the next few months from the sale of our for the proceeds from the timber harvest that's happening up in the watershed. But then we're going to also be getting funds which are going to be coming in at the end of our fiscal year from the second round of carbon credits. I would also note, and we remind the council, that there was an opportunity to potentially sell more carbon credits. And estimates around $50,000 that we may see there. What we are looking at is what can we do to be able to preserve the projects that we have within the Capital Improvement Fund and that are already budgeted, and not cut something and still be able to afford it, and we can. It, as Mr. Crater had indicated, it most likely is going to take a budget adjustment later on down the line, but it won't throw other budgeted projects projects out to be able to handle this project. Now, moving on with the $450,000 worth of repairs, Mr. Crater had mentioned also back in July that there is a need to do repairs on the trestles, and in this area he's showing you in the green. I would also note that there's areas to the east of Astoria, east of 39th Street, which have the same different scenarios. There is repairs in the amount of approximately $450,000. We have included some contingencies in that figure as well to try and avoid, after we've seen what the bids have come in for this project, try to foresee better in the future what we might see in those projects, but in budgeting $450,000 of work. We're needing to do repairs east of 39th Street to keep that area open to pedestrians. We're also, if we're going to be looking at having the trolley open next summer, we're going to need to do repairs on the trestles along the trolley route before March. And so what has been identified after conducting the financial analysis for that phase is the Promote Astoria Fund. I'm going to say that through the budget process, there was lots of discussion about how much contingency should be left in the Promote Astoria Fund. I'm going to say that having a healthy ending fund balance and contingency is allowing us to be able to move forward with this project. And we're fortunate that we will have the funds this fiscal year to be able to afford this. It's going to take a budget amendment, but we can afford it with monies that we have on hand or will be receiving throughout the payment of room tax. I will note that this is going to bring us down to a fairly to a lower ending fund balance than we maybe were hoped. It's, I think, in the range of $120,000 is going to be the estimate. That being said, this year we have paid off the loan for the Garden of Surgeon Waves, and we won't have those expenses in the future. What's going to become critical is, as we move forward, there's going to need to be approximately $250,000 in repair each year after that, for the looking out to the next 10 years, to maintain the Riverwalk, to be able to keep it operable. We're going to be looking asking the Trolley Association to be able to share in this cost of maintenance. And we're going to be taking it in the approach of saying, looking from a financial budgeting standpoint, where we're going to be looking at how much revenue do we anticipate coming in through room tax? How much projection-wise are we going to need to be able to have to be able to pay for things such as maintenance of these parks, of the parks, the Greensmith project, and say, go to the Trolley Association and say, this is how much is needed to be able to continue full operation of the trolley. And that may translate into potentially increases in fares. I don't know how that's going to happen, but at least that's what we're looking at moving forward with.
Has there ever been consideration of an increase to room tax?
I don't believe we can.
Yeah. We're mandated by state statute. And
use the microphone.
It's set by state statute.
It's set by state statute what we can charge, and that was set several years ago. The amount that we charge.
Well, I know I'm in the minority, but a large part of the Pomona Story Fund every year goes to the Chamber of Commerce. And I think rather than going to the Trolley Association, which is a small, mostly volunteer operation, to go to the Chamber and say, we need to free up more funds, and could you possibly consider taking a little bit less? I won't be around to be part of that discussion, but I hope it is that is one of the alternatives that the city looks at as far as funding the yearly maintenance costs for the trestles.
At least, we have had some preliminary conversations with the Trolley Association. We've met with their president, Willis Van Dusen, who has stated that he would be taking a proposal forward to the board. It was the amount wasn't discussed, and I attended the Trolley Association summer banquet and discussed this issue as well with the Trolley Association. So at least we started to have some conversations with that group.
Any more questions or discussion, or can we have a motion?
I'd like to make the motion that the City Council adopt a resolution declaring an emergency and award the contract for the street and repair work to Burkittson Construction Incorporated in the amount of $170,989.
Second. Roll call, Ms. Cosby.
Councilor Emmerwell?
Aye.
Councilor Herzig?
Aye.
Councilor Price?
Aye.
Councilor Ward?
Aye.
Mayor Lemire?
Aye. The end of our regular agenda items, so now is your chance. If there are any things that you want to talk about, this is time for new business and miscellaneous public comment. If you have anything to say, if you'll come to the front microphone, say your name and your address.
Kevin McKeon's way over here. Good evening, and thank you for this opportunity to address you all tonight. My name is Lynn Hadley. I reside at 3795 Leif Erickson Drive here in Astoria. I have lived here and run my business in Astoria for the past 5.5 years, and recently the owner of the building where I rent my business told me I must vacate the building. He has sold the building to a party that wishes to use the entire 10,000 square foot space for a marijuana sales dispensary. This building is located on Commercial Street between 11th and 12th Streets. And aside from being terribly disappointed that I have to relocate my established and successful business, and find a new location. I question the regulations that apply to the already numerous businesses selling marijuana in our town, not to mention one planning to open smack dab in the middle of Astoria's main business district. There has been such a great effort by the city, the port, the chamber, and local merchant associations to create and enhance an inviting downtown economic area. I'm curious to know about the presence of such stores right downtown. We go to the trouble to bring in cruise ships and have a positive media attention to the town, and this is all well and good and much appreciated by local merchants. But groups, families, and tourists are not drawn to the offerings of our town because of the ready access to marijuana. They want to shop, see local art, explore the literature and history of the area, and people are going to go where they need to buy marijuana. But our downtown is the spine of our community, and the opportunity to provide a fresh, fun, and fine alternative to mall shopping, internet shopping, and big box store shopping. We should proudly promote the unique shops, art galleries, book and antique stores of Astoria that make this a beautiful and special place, and a place people enjoy and desire to visit and care to return to. While I don't pretend to be ignorant to the money being made in the marijuana sales and the state benefits in collecting the sales tax, I do wonder how many pot shops can be sustained in our small town, and how well the charm factor will be maintained as boutiques give way to more marijuana stores. It would seem that it is at cross purposes of the grand plan to maintain the interest and in visiting Astoria and growing the economy of our fair city. Thank you.
Trying to envision the space between 11th and 12th and Commercial. What's the name of your business?
Garbo's Vintage Wear.
Oh, okay.
Next to Fields Only. It's the old Joanne Fabric space.
Right, and that's been vacant. And so now, would this come? Carol's out in the hallway. Would this come before the Planning Commission? A marijuana dispensary going in there if it's sold?
Well, I kept talking.
Yeah. Just to see if there's any breaks that could be put on this.
Yeah, so marijuana dispensaries are treated as retail services, and so that's an outright prohibited use in the downtown district. So it comes across the counter, we check it off, they go upstairs and get their business license. It's pretty straightforward.
So it wouldn't come before the planning?
It would not.
So there'd be no chance for public input on this? Well, that's unfortunate.
No.
It doesn't look like there's any recourse coming.
Can I ask a question? Yes. Is it possible to limit the number of marijuana stores in a city, other than by distance from schools and that sort of thing?
I'll let Kevin take that. You know, that's a tough one. There are some jurisdictions that have tried to do that, and it's has not proved successful. If the story wants to take a look at that, we can certainly do that. But that's a much more complicated process to do that.
And Blair, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, as Kevin mentioned, the ways that other cities have done it is to restrict the distance. One of the ways they've done it is to restrict the distances between different retail establishments, or restrict it from certain zones, like school zones and that sort of thing. There's probably a way that it can be done, but it usually takes like a ruler and a little ingenuity to figure out what the actual restrictions would be to accomplish what you want to do. And at this point, I mean, you couldn't place those restrictions on a legally established business anyway, so it's like closing the barn door after the horse is left.
Right, so do we know how many pot shops we have in Astoria, in the city limits now?
Four. There's
one shed opened up.
It hasn't officially opened up yet, but that's the fourth one I'm thinking of.
That'd be five.
Okay, five.
Or five or six-ish.
Yes. That's the only one in the south slope that I'm aware of that's mostly concentrated by US 30 corridor.
Well, I would be in favor of restricting the number myself because I think it just gets a little crazy. But it's Astoria, it's the Wild West. I asked about this earlier, and there's not any traction really on the council for that. So I love you, Sean.
Thank you for your patience in waiting so long to address this. Appreciate it. I hope you'll find a different location somewhere. I know that is it the Leotas who bought one of the Bell properties are looking for tenants. I'm not sure if that would be possible. But hang in there. Please don't give up on commercial.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, City Commissioners. I'm Charles Johnson, and I am only a visitor who mostly resides in Portland, where I've attended many hours of City Council deliberation as they look at the issue that was just faced by this lady whose business is closing. Many man hours have gone into looking at the best way to use marijuana retailers as, some people would say, economic catalyst. I would encourage you to, encourage the woman, first of all, to talk about the fact that 10,000 square feet is a lot. I don't know what the size of your other dispensaries are. Another issue is that the Oregon Liquor Control Commission may be involved in siting and density now that we transitioned the medical marijuana program into the retail. So there may be state-related regulations that would allow you to talk, influence your talk about density for those four, five, six, or seven shops. It's always good to have destination businesses in downtown. So, I mean, obviously, you don't want to have, sometimes it's unpleasant to wait for the market to sort it out. But I think economically, as far as special taxing and use, in other cities, they're talking about revenue generated specifically from those stores and how to repurpose it, whether into education or economic and environmental things. And with the announcement the other public speakers just brought us, I would encourage you to have some conversations with your city attorney about how you can balance making the most of new revenue and new businesses and also maintaining the climate and appearance on your business area that we would want, because there's definitely potential there. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, we need your address for the minutes, please.
Sure. 540 Southeast 73rd, Portland, Oregon, 97215. On Mount David. Thank you.
Any other business before the
Good evening. Mick Hague, 1/3 Street here in Astoria. I'd just simply like to thank Councillor Hersig for listening to me and other people. He does an excellent job of doing that. Not only listening to the people, but also expressing their thoughts at these meetings. And it's going to be, it'll be much missed by many of us. Hopefully others will step forward and replace his very nice thoughtfulness towards the public who don't have the ear of council members over many years. I was at the 50th anniversary of the bridge. It was nice to hear the Burgermeister talk about the needs of taking care of people in the city who they themselves many times cannot take care of themselves. And again, we had one person that we could point to who has done that. And again, the mayor invited Councilor Harrison up because of his efforts on the Warming Center. And again, when he leaves, I hope there is somebody who steps forward and has his heart towards these people and steps forward and does things, not just donate money to different things, but actually physically steps forward and works on their behalf and does things. And just a little while ago, I mean, for 3 years, I've been asking for street signs along the Riverwalk. Various reasons why it hasn't happened, but we still, 3 years later, almost every year I have asked. And again, Councilor Erzy tonight was on, brought that up as an issue, working at the intersections of the streets along the Riverwalk. Again, listening to the people and expressing the thoughts of the people at the right time during the meetings. That is needed again and again. And he has shown that year after year. And again, he will be missed. Hopefully, one of the things I did talk at the park board was the fact that graffiti was happening along the Riverwalk a little too much. And I can walk by the same place as I do every year, every day almost, and it's still there year after year. We were talking about the intersections of 10th and 11th Street. Go there, look at the trash cans. The graffiti on the trash cans have been there for 2 years. So hopefully somebody in the city will do that. You can go along the Riverwalk with a map, mark the different graffiti spots, and then over time, clean them up. It would help a great deal with a great many people. So I thank you again, Councilor Erzy. I appreciate it. I hope you have a good time.
Anyone else? There's Ms. Hernandez.
I drove by, I saw lights on, I'm like, oh, it's still happening.
Give me a running start. Okay, thank you all for coming. We're going to adjourn and go into
Astoria
Development Commission.